Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which you can find on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and you can also find it as a free download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the opportunity and the pleasure to speak with another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. And she's also a return guest, which I'm just really excited about. So I want to say hello to Alexandra. Hey, how are you today?
Hey, Pam. I'm doing well. And you?
Good. I'm thankful that we have this opportunity to get together again.
Me too.
Yeah, so to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself to us, who you are, where you're from, and what keeps you busy?
Yeah, so my name is Alexandra D'Agostino. I'm 27. I'm a registered nurse. I just became a registered nurse in the last year or so. I'm originally from London, Ontario, Canada, but I just recently moved to Ottawa, which is like the capital of Canada, for work. So, and then what keeps me busy? Well, like I said, I'm a registered nurse. I'm actually just starting a new job on Monday, so I'm quite excited about that. But I also like to bike ride. I'm a knitter. I watch way too much Netflix, as I'm sure everybody has been doing lately when during this pandemic.
Yeah.
I really love to bake and cook.
Wow. Well, you definitely do sound like you're really busy and exciting. Congratulations about starting a new job Monday.
Monday, yes.
will this be your first job as an RN?
So it'll be my second job. I was working in Toronto in the neonatal intensive care unit at Sickett's Hospital, which is a pretty famous hospital here in Canada. But it just wasn't for me. So I saw, after about 5 months, I decided to leave, and then to pursue other opportunities. So it's nice because I kind of got the summer off in the end. I could spend it with my parents. I could actually go home. So I wasn't working in a hospital anymore. So I got to spend really great quality time with them, and then I also got to help my mom plan the Canadian Studying Association a virtual conference as well, which is something I know we want to talk about.
Absolutely, yes, I want to get to that. But first of all, had you always wanted to be a nurse? I don't recall nursing coming up the first time that we chatted.
No, it was not in the cards whatsoever. But the last time we chatted, I was just finishing up my Bachelor of Arts degree from Wilfrid Laurier University, which is in Waterloo, Ontario. It's about an hour away from London and an hour away from Toronto. It's kind of like smack dab in the middle. But I was doing a double major in anthropology and psychology at the time. With the hope of getting into music therapy, actually. But then during my second last year, like the summer before I graduated, I kind of started thinking, I'm like, do I really want to do music therapy? Is that something I really want to do? Is it really for me? Is the program for me even? Because I know it's quite hard to get into, since there are only really like two major, really well-known programs in Canada for music therapy for people who don't have like a bachelor of music. So usually people who have a bachelor of music then go into music therapy. But for me, like there were only a few schools that would have accepted me, like without having a bachelor of music. And I just know like the application process was going to be insane. The audition process was going to be really hard. I would have to work my butt off. And I'm like, is it really worth it in the end? When I know after you graduate, you're not guaranteed a job either. And I wanted to do like another degree, or at least something that would at least guarantee me a job like at the end of it, because unfortunately my Bachelor of Arts double major in anthropology and psychology was not going to get me a job anywhere. Let's just be honest here. So I had always had medicine like in the back of my mind. I thought something I was interested in. I love watching all the medical shows. I like watching surgeries on YouTube. Even I'm really that nerdy of a person.
Oh, gosh.
And they don't gross me out. But I was always told in like elementary school and high school that I was never very good in science. I shouldn't take it. I shouldn't take it off to grade 10 because it was going to affect my university average, because I'm for us in Canada, our university average is whatever grades we get in grade 11 and grade 12. Oh. So like it's something to always like keep in mind here. I don't know if it's different in the States, but so I didn't take it after grade 10, but then I'm like, I still want to take it, you know, like maybe just in case. So I started taking some electives in my university, my first university degree. So I took like first and second year biologies. I took human anatomy for fun. It's a really hard course, and like everyone thought I was crazy for taking it for fun. And I took human physiology too, and I took a statistics course just in case. Wow. That most people need in nursing, like to get into nursing school here. So, you know, so I took it for fun. I'm like, you know what? Like, I didn't do too badly either in those courses. I wasn't the best, but I wasn't the worst either. Mm-hmm. And I realized that, like, I was retained, like, actually, like, all the information that I learned, or most of the information I learned. Whereas if you ask me today, like, about some anthropologist in some country, I would just be like, I'm sorry, what? Who? I was interested at the time, but it's like, it's not something that ever really stuck in my brain, but I like to study it. So, you know, so then I started volunteering at a hospital in Waterloo. It's called Grand River Hospital. It's a really amazing hospital, just for the shout out to there. But they have a really great program. It's called a student internship, then where they interview students and they have to come in as volunteers to work in different units or different places of the hospital. Mm. Just get experience in a hospital to see if that's what they want to do. So I was able to do that for 2 years during my last year and a half at the university, and it was a really amazing, because I worked like really closely with the nurses, and I saw what they did. I got to see like the relationship that they developed with their patients, you know, as the patients either came back for appointments or like they were just there one time. But I really loved seeing like what the nurses did and the work that they did as well. And then I got to see what the doctors did as well. I was kind of being between nursing school and med school at that point, but I just saw how the doctors, they just go in, like they just went like in and out of the rooms and the different units I was on. They didn't really stay and develop a relationship with the patient. It was all pretty much like on the medical basis side. And like, and then I'm someone who like I truly love volunteering. I truly love helping people. If there had been a master's in volunteering or a master's in helping people, then I probably would have done that. But unfortunately, I realized I actually have to apply it to a field and to a job and all that. So I decided that nursing was more for me than medical school. So in my last year, I signed up for all the courses that I was missing at the time. And again, I applied to nursing school, and I just put it out there and just see what happened. And I ended up getting it on the first try. It's really hard to get into nursing school here. It's almost as hard as med school. So because you have to have a really great average, and for the school I got into, I had to go on an interview. I had to do an online assessment slash like quiz. Just to see, what's the word I'm thinking of? Just to judge my like common sense and all that, basically, you know, and my sense of right and wrong. Mm. And then the school I ended up getting into was for Nipissing University, which is actually it's usually all the way up in North Bay, Ontario, so very much like Northern Ontario. But their nursing program, it was only 2 years instead of four, which was nice because it's an accelerated program for people who already have a bachelor's degree. I was able to do that, but it was in Toronto, instead of all the way up in North Bay. So I spent 2 years in Toronto. After graduating from my first degree, and I was lucky that like this program also like allowed me to specialize a lot. It was called the nursing scholar practitioner program, but in the end I got a bachelor of science in nursing from it. Mm. But it really promoted how nursing used to be taught, which was very much on the job. It wasn't in lecture halls and all that. Mm. So I would only have like three weeks to a month of class. I can make it, then the rest of the semester would be spent doing hours in the hospital. So it was very much like a self-taught program. It was very, very much like a learning on the job like program, like how nursing used to be like taught, like I said, like back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s before it became like more of a like a well-known thing in university and all that. And I spent most of my placements at SickKids Hospital, like I was saying, in Toronto. But I also got to have a few placements with Toronto Public Health in a Brandon breastfeeding clinic, which I absolutely love. I'm a big advocate for breastfeeding. reading. Actually, after I get a few years of nursing experience in, and actually like to become like a lactation consultant. Maybe open up my own like breastfeeding clinic down the road or something like that.
Wow.
maybe. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
And then I also had my last semester placement. So I'm consolidated. That's what's called like consolidating my learning. So it just means I spent more hours there. I was basically doing a full-time schedule and going to school at the same time. And then I was in labor and delivery. So I was helping moms to deliver their babies, and also helping to take care of them after the fact, like postpartum and all that. And then I graduated in July of 2019. I took my NCLEX, which is like the big nursing licensing exam you have to take here, and it's the same thing in the States too. I took that in October. I passed on the first try. Thank goodness. I was writing that exam for like 5.5 hours. So I was really happy to hear that I passed. I did not want to have to do that again.
And
then I graduated in November, and I started working at my first job in February. Actually, of this past year, it was funny because the day that I started on the unit itself, like actually like doing shifts, it was a day that the pandemic was declared.
Oh,
so that just made the job even harder, basically, which is another reason why I realized it wasn't for me either.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that's kind of like from like then to now, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let me ask you, did stuttering impact your education and your progression in nursing?
I would say it didn't impact it negatively for sure. All my professors were very understanding about it. I was signed up with the accessibility office remotely, of course, because we didn't actually have a campus. We just had an office in Toronto where we held a few classes, and that was it. But all my professors are fairly understanding about it in simulation exams that we had at the end of almost each semester. They were timed, but for me, like, they were never timed, even though I still made it on time usually, so I was excited about that. Most of the time I'm fairly fluent, but when it's like exams, I'm like, I get a bit anxious and my stutter gets a bit worse, like,
yeah. How did they know that you stutter? Did you advertise or disclose?
I'm a huge advertiser. I'm a huge discloser. I always tell people it's something I can't hide. So like I've had it since I was 7. Please let me know if you have any questions. Like, I'm fairly open about it. 'Cause something, like I said, I can't hide. I'm not like embarrassed by it. It's just me. It's just who I am. So
have you ever had any negative reactions from a patient?
I was worried for sure about potentially maybe having a few like negative reactions, especially when working with kids and having also like work with their parents. I was afraid the parent would say, this person doesn't know what she's doing. She can't even communicate. Why is she looking after my kid? So it's a very like, it's a very acute hospital. It's where the sickest of kids go in Ontario, or maybe all of Canada. Yeah. Even because it's that special, it's like specialized of a hospital. But I never had any negative reactions from parents. I'm like, every time I would go into a room in the morning and say, hey, my name's Alexandra, I'm going to be one of your nurses today, I'm a person who stutters. If I said I was 7, let me know if you have any questions about it. I'm fairly open. Like the parents were always like, they're always commend me like about it and say, wow, it's so amazing that like you're working as a nurse and you're so open about it. And then even the kids, they'd be really amazed by it, because they would see that I have something else like going on with me that isn't like exactly normal, you know. But then look how far I've come in life, and look where I am now. And like, I'm like, it was great because like it helped me develop a better relationship with my patients, actually, because I feel like the kids were able to relate to me more, and they were actually more apt to tell me things. And disclose how they were actually doing. They would tell the doctor, oh, I'm fine today, I'm okay, I'm not feeling any pain. But then they would actually tell me, like, you know what, I actually am feeling like a small bit of pain. And then I would then relay that information to the doctors. Like, they were more open with me because like they felt like they could relate to me more. Actually, so I thought that was really great, and my stutter actually worked to my advantage in that sense.
Yeah, wow, and you know, like, as you said, like, being open and making yourself vulnerable and therefore being authentic, I think that invites others to do the same, yeah. Right? Right? Like when we're just like really putting ourselves out there, other people may feel safer to do the same. And that sounds a little bit like what the experience you had with kids was like.
Yeah. But honestly, like, it took me ages to actually, to be able to get to this point, to be able to be like this thing, to be able to be visible, to be able to be this vulnerable with everyone in this, like this courageous, I guess you could say too, like it's something that's taken me a while to develop and be comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just want to say, you mentioned that you love volunteering and what I remember most about you from when we were at the NSA conferences here in the States, you always wanted to volunteer. And I thought that was just so awesome. You wanted to help out with the first timers luncheon and essentially you like offered yourself up to help in whatever way you could. And that has always stuck with me. You're that kind of person that like isn't just going to say, oh, how can I help, but you actually follow through and you do yeah. it. So wonderful.
Yeah, it's something I'm truly passionate about, and like especially with the NSA, it holds a close place in my heart, because like that was the first conference association I found, the first conference I went to for people who stutter, and I remember it changed my life completely. It changed my view on stuttering. Like I feel like I owe it almost all to the NSA, also to the CSA, of course. I don't want to but honestly, like the NSA has just helped me so much, helped my parents so much, helped us to develop a better relationship like with each other. We're like, my stutter isn't like an elephant in the room anymore. Mm-hmm. We talk about it more openly. My parents understand more where I'm coming from now. And then seeing other people who stutter and hearing other people who stutter and openly, I thought it was always something I had to be ashamed of. And I would spend every Christmas and birthday, like wishing that, like I would put on my list as a kid, like to make my stutter go away, aww. Like for my Christmas list or my birthday list. After that, I never did that again, because it's something I realized I'm like, I should be proud about and I should try and use to my advantage, and I should not let it like control my life. Just like the NSA says, like stutter like a rock star,
right?
You know? After realizing that, I want to be able to give back to the NSA, and I want to make sure, especially for first timers, that they had just as much of a life changing experience as I did.
What would you say that was the tipping point? Like, what was it about the NSA conference that made it life changing?
So I always tell this story, and then like there's a person in it, and like this person always gets like, she just like, oh no, like I didn't do much, I swear I didn't. But I'm like, no, you really did do a lot. But like I remember walking into the hotel, my mom and I were met by Stephen Kaufman, of course, because he's like the spokesperson of the NSA. He's awesome like that. And and with our suitcases in hand, before we could even check into the hotel, he dragged us around the entire hotel, and he introduced us to like 70 different people.
And to
70 different people whom I met in the span of that short like half hour, like hour. Like the person I remember most was Miranda Smith. She was helping to set up, and Courtney was next to her. And I remember like Stephen introducing us and just hearing Miranda speak. She speaks like spitfire, just like she says anything she wants. She talks so fast, but the whole time she still gets her point across, and the whole time she's stuttering. And that was life changing for me, because I never heard anyone stutter so openly and being so like just being so out there and being so confident with herself. I told my mom after we get back to the room, I want to be like her one day. And I feel like she's been a role model for me this whole time, even though we're like basically the same age. I think she's like a year older or something like that. Mm-hmm. But she's been such a role model to me, and just seeing like just having that experience, that's one of the things I remember most from my first conference, which was just seeing her and hearing how she spoke spoke, and like, and how she was like actually like eloquent, even though she was stuttering. And she didn't care if she stuttered whatsoever. She just let it out. She didn't care whatsoever. She didn't care like, well, what other people thought about her or her stutter. And I remember just being like, I want to be like her, you know, and I want to be as open. I want to be as out there, and I want to be as comfortable with my stutter as she is.
She is awesome, and I believe she works with preschool kids.
Yeah, I think, isn't she like a teacher or something like that?
I believe so. Yeah, which again is another really front-facing, highly communicative profession to get involved in. Now you mentioned your mom. She came with you to your first conference.
Yeah, my mom came with me to my first one. I was in Fort Worth, Texas, back in 2011. The whole reason we went to that conference in particular is because my SLPC suggested it to me at the time. But also because I fell in love with the movie The King's Speech. It was a huge hit here in Canada, and I dragged all my friends to go and see it. I went to the movie theaters about 8 times, I think, to actually go and see it. So I spent all my money, but it's fine. We actually went to hear David Seidler speak, and like to meet him, I was so excited and all that. I wanted to tell him how much I loved the movie and how much like it helped me and my friends and all that, and my friends to actually like more so understand like where I'm coming from and all that, like with my stutter. And so my mom just went, and then after hearing like how amazing of a time we had, then my dad came the next year.
Oh, that's so amazing. 2012
in Florida, I think it was.
Yeah, so 2012 it was in St. Petersburg.
Yes, I was going to say St. Petersburg, but I thought that was the wrong name, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Then we've been going ever since. And even though I haven't been able to go the past few years because of nursing school, and unfortunately, my parents have still gone to the conferences. because they've developed relationships there, and really close friendships, and my mom runs a parent of young adults workshop now too. She's been doing that with I'm blanking on her name, but Sarah Onofre's mom.
Annette,
thank you. Yes. Like I'm blanking on her name. She, Annette and my mom are really close too now as well.
Cool. Yeah. Wow. I want to say, I think I do remember seeing Eva at an NSA conference that you weren't at. And I'm like, wow.
It's not fair, right?
really. And so now your mom is the chair of the Canadian Stuttering Association, right?
She's been the chair for 2 years now. It's 2 years.
Now, how did that come to be? She's not a person who stutters. What intrigued her about wanting to get involved?
Well, I actually got on the board of directors for the CSA first. I was invited to be on it through Daniele Rossi, who was the social media person at the time. So I was invited to be on because he saw all the amazing work I was doing on the Teen Advisory Council and how much I was posting on Facebook and all that, like trying to get the teens involved, like trying to get the teens involved in the NSA, and he just saw how amazing I was doing, and he wanted to kind of bring me in on the CSA. So I got on the board in 2014, and then a couple years back, our chair left. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to do the job anymore, and we were functioning We were functioning without a chair for about a year or so. So we actually planned a whole conference by ourselves without a chair, which was it was quite the feat. But we were able to do it. I kept saying to my mom, like, I wish we had a chair, like it would just be so much easier. And my mom had just rolled off the board of another organization in the US for her work. She works in IT at the London Public Library, but she goes like all these like big library conferences in the States. And she actually used to work for this company, but then she got on the board of it. And then she was the chair, and she had just rolled off of being the chair. She was the past chair at the time, so she had experience of being a chair of a very large organization, even larger than the NSA, like, and very much so larger than the CSA, because we're fairly small still. And I kept saying to her, like, I wish we had a chair, like, and like, and then there's someone that we were considering, but we weren't like the biggest fans of them. And I said it would be great if someone else who like came up, who had more experience with people who stutter, who was more of an advocate for them, who really wanted to promote the CSA as it was, and like, I didn't want to change anything. And my mom's like, well, I might be up for the job. So I pitched the board. I pitched the idea to the board, and they were all for it. And my mom instantly became the new chair, basically, and has been the chair ever since. Like I said, I think for 2 years now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's amazing. I mean, yeah. That's like the epitome of, you know, a cheerleader for a child who stutters. Like, the parent gets deeply in involved. And then she's as impacted as you were by the support, you know, that you got and that now you give. And I'm so glad that you brought up the CSA. You know, I attended the Canadian Stuttering Association online conference last month, and I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, because it was amazing. Like, you guys did such a good job organizing that. So was that the first time you'd done it on an online basis?
Yes, it was our first time doing an online virtual conference, or just having any aspect of our conference online, basically. It was something we had been considering back and forth, and we've been throwing the idea around for over the summer, like, and all that, because we were like, do we really want to do a virtual conference? We really wanted to have an in-person one, but with the pandemic, we were worried that we wouldn't get the attendance that we wanted, or like, we're also the interest, because like, with the borders being closed, there was a reason why we were going to have it in Niagara Falls, because we wanted to attract as many people from the States as we could. So we decided to move it online back in, I think, like about August, almost September, basically. So we unfortunately had to plan the conference like pretty quickly, but I was really glad when it all came together, and it was so well received as well.
Mm-hmm. So who did the bulk of the work? I mean, who did the, you know, organizing, the reaching out and asking people to do workshops? Was it a full board commitment for getting it together?
It was everyone on the board, basically, and a board of directors consists of about 10 people. We are all volunteers, and like, no one gets paid. So it's like the entirety of the CSA is actually volunteer run. And it all works on a donations basis too, because we don't receive any funding from our Canadian government as of yet. We're hoping to eventually, but right now, no, unfortunately. It was just us volunteers dedicating as much of our time as we could, and we were put into different committees, like Commerce Planning Committee. We have our website committee. We also brought in a few volunteers to help us with different aspects of the conference, like finding other volunteers, and like even my boyfriend ended up helping out. He actually did design the registration website, which everyone was very impressed with, and we're all very happy with. It was a group effort.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I was really happy to be part of it, giving a workshop myself with a colleague who is an SLP. And how that came about was I and my friend Charlie had given this this workshop on covert stuttering in the workplace. And one of your people, Carla DeMonico, I think, was at that webinar and asked if we would be willing to reprise it at the Canadian Stuttering Association. And we're like, oh, sure. And that's how that came to be. And because I was presenting that, I then became aware of all the other sessions that you guys had, and it was great. You guys really did a wonderful job.
Oh thank you so much. I got distracted because my camera just turned off.
I noticed. Like it's off, and you're just on. But I was like, well, good. I'm glad she's still on audio.
No, yeah, I'm still here. I think it picks up through my computer.
Okay, all right.
Oh, there it goes. Now it's back.
Do you guys think that you might attempt to run an online conference again?
We did ask in our feedback sheets, that one of our feedback email, we do have a sheet that people fill out at the conference. So that's why I said sheet, but like in our feedback emails, like if people will be willing to attend like either a virtual conference or an online or an in-person conference, but like they can't attend an in-person conference, would they rather attend it online, et cetera. So that's something that we'll be discussing. Actually, we have a board meeting tomorrow that we'll be discussing it. Mm-hmm. But we're thinking that maybe going forward in the future, that for in-person conferences, we might have a virtual aspect. So people who can't attend the conference in person, they might then be able to attend like some of the work talks, at least like online or virtually, or have them streaming afterwards. Basically, if we like maybe like recording like a few of the most important ones and like the keynote, for example. Mm-hmm. So something to definitely take into consideration going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think that is also a really good idea. When the NSA's conference moved to online this past year, we had like 1,500 people registered and attending, which is, you know, way over the number of people that would attend in person. And I think it was for the exact same reason you just mentioned. Not everybody can get to a conference physically. It's either too far away or it's too expensive. So I think that having some aspects of an in-person conference online should like be the, you know, protocol moving ahead.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I feel like this pandemic has really changed the ways that we view like certain things, our perspectives on them, and see. Well, you know, maybe we should switch like switch things up a bit, you know, to be able to make our conferences more inclusive. Right. You know, like because like you said, you got 1,500 people. I know like the most the NSA has ever gone is like 1,000 or 1,100 or so. So the fact that you were able to reach 1,500 people, and like for us at our conference, we got about 130 people, which for us is a lot. Mm-hmm. So even that was fairly amazing too. And so something that like I feel like instead of promoting attendance like for like well no well also like in like in you know like I'm also like all, but while also trying to wrap my head around this idea, trying to promote like in-person attendance at conferences, while also keeping in mind that like you know maybe we should also be promoting attendance like online in person because really what we should be promoting in the end is reaching as many people as we can and supporting as many people we can across our country, you know. Mm-hmm. So just to make sure that like everyone knows that like they're not alone, someone else has this disorder as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the live stream or the Facebook Live, because I had an amazing opportunity at the end of October to be part of a panel for the Peru Stuttering Association. Cool. So which meant that it was in Spanish, which I don't speak, so I had to have a translator. And they Facebook lived it. So talk wow. about intimidating. Like
I didn't even know that Peru had a stuttering association.
Yeah. It's like it's called like Tartamunda. I mean, I think that's the Spanish name, but okay. It's the Peruvian Stuttering Association. And it's mainly men. So one of the things that I did talk about was suggesting, and again, it was so weird to like talk and then hear my translator, you know, roll it back in Spanish. And I was like, oh, I hope he's really like capturing everything that I said. But I gave them some ideas to be more inclusive to women. So I thought that was neat. But the Facebook Live part was really good because it gave other people an opportunity to be part of it, you know?
Yeah, and not just across Peru, but across the world.
Right, exactly.
That's so
exactly.
Amazing.
It really was. It was just a really, really amazing opportunity for them to do it, for me to have been asked to be part of it. It was really cool. So we are going into wind down mode now. Gosh, it's so funny when two people who stutter get to talking, the time just flies.
It does. Yes, it does.
So I just wanted to kind of wind down with, we know that there may not be a vaccine for the general public worldwide until late spring or summer of next year. So I believe that the NSA and maybe the CSA will be planning an online conference again.
Yeah, potentially.
For next year. What do you think about that? Do you think now, based on your experience, that you could move ahead with that pretty easily?
Yeah. And now that we have the now that we have like a foundation, like and a framework laid down, I think it would be a lot easier to plan a virtual conference for sure. Almost, I would almost say like almost easier than planning an in-person conference at this point. Especially because we were going for a 2-day one versus a 1-day, so we were laying new groundwork there as well. So if you're thinking almost in a way, it would be easier. But I mean, I feel like still it wouldn't be as fun. Like it's just there's something to going to a conference, staying in a hotel with everyone, like and then having that fun of like kind of like taking over the hotel. It's like,
right.
It's like and making other people feel like an outsider for once because they don't stutter, you know.
Right.
Just like, and getting to see everyone and hugging everybody. I'm a huge hugger, so not
I am too.
And having a social distance is so hard for me. Like I haven't hugged my friends in months. It's like I just want to hug my friends,
right?
Or hug like the people I meet, or be able to hug my patients, for example. Like therapeutically, of course, but like, yeah, like I feel like it, I mean, to be able to like to have like another virtual conference. I mean, of course, the CSA would do it, and we would be more than thrilled to do it. But I feel like I would still love to have an in-person conference somehow, even if we don't have to socially distance. It would still be really nice.
Yeah.
And hopefully, in the next like two or three years, maybe we can have that again. Then.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see.
I hope so, and I think that would give, you know, a lot of people, but particularly people who stutter, something to look forward to, you know,
exactly,
because
yeah.
Like this year has been so bad. We all need something positive to look forward to. Well,
agreed.
Yeah. Alexandra, thank you so much for coming back as a return guest. It's been great catching up with you and, you know, seeing how much you've grown as a leader.
Thank you. Yeah. It was really, really great catching up with you again, too, Pam. And like seeing that you're still doing these amazing podcasts too, also.
Yeah. And good luck Monday, at the first, your first day of your new job.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited, but like nervous, but like, it's just a corporate orientation. It's actually online. So I'm going to be here for my first day of work.
Oh.
So this is true pandemic style, even in nursing.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah. Thanks again. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.